It is time to start our workshop, and we say these words because that's when they begin recording. So let's open with a brief prayer, because that's the way I pray, it's pretty brief. Our Heavenly Father, we ask you again to be with us, to share insight and grace and grace with us. And we pray, amen.
Amen.
So today we're going to talk a little bit more, a step further from some of the things we did yesterday. We talked about a communication pattern and looked at some communication styles. And those of you that weren't here but want to look at the piece of paper on that, you could. And I just want to give credit to the folks. This is Talking and Listening Together. It's a program that was originally at the University of Minnesota, and it's Nunley and Wackman and Sherrod Miller, and they're actually now in Colorado, where they run lots of trainings of this nature. And you can, if someone was interested, you can find, gosh, in almost every big city, somebody running programs of that nature using this model. And what we're going to do today is pass along an idea or two, and hopefully do it the way that we've learned is the best way to learn it, and that is, rather than lecture to you, we're going to role play a fictitious but difficult issue that we'll work through the steps. And frankly, my experience has been that if you were to follow these steps with whomever you have a difficulty with, it really comes out with a really good solution. The tricky part is it's a lot of work, and a lot of folks a lot of the time just don't want to spend that much time and don't want to work that hard in working through an issue of this nature. So what we're going to do is talk to you about the way to work. And I handed out that awareness wheel, and you can take a look at that, and you'll see that on the wheel that you have. And what I ask you to do is watch how we go through this process, and as we do it, try to think how you could do that. And obviously, maybe not obviously, the program is set up for businesses, it's set up for groups as well as for couples. Anybody that you have an issue with. And an issue is the thing that you put in the middle of your paper. And that's something that comes up in the relationship repeatedly. These folks call that an issue because it doesn't get resolved. It's something that nags, it stays there, but you never get through it. It just remains an issue. And so what you do is we work through these steps, and we're going to go through, thank you, we're going to go through them for you. And the tricky part is to stay with the process. And you can see that the person that's on the listening end will be asked to attend to in attending behavior, to look to more information, to summarize, to make sure that you got it, and to ask open-ended questions should that be the case. There's also a place to take time out, because in issues of this nature, sometimes you just get overwhelmed, and you really have to take a time out, or to check the process, or how are we doing? And the person that's sending the information is asked to write it out ahead of time. Now, we've written out ours ahead of time, what we're going to go through today. And that's what we ask you to do with an issue. It's amazing how it keeps you on track. Because one person goes through their wheel, and they share their sense data, They share their thoughts about what's going on. They share their feelings. They share what they want for themselves, for others around, for us, whoever us is, and they share their actions. And then the other person goes through that process. Now, we'll go through it once, and then we'll open it up and discuss and talk about it. But I, on a really difficult issue, I don't think you get through this once, because you hear things that trigger things that you want to respond to, but that's not the way the model is set up. The model is set up that one goes through and the other responds, the other goes through and you respond. And then my suggestion invariably is that you go away. You don't continue right then. Some people say, well, that was a zinger and I won't talk about that right now. I don't think that's smart to do. But I don't think everybody pays attention to things like I suggest. I also suggest to people that are having difficulty, never discuss difficult issues after 11 o'clock at night. It just doesn't work. Now it's 3 o'clock in the morning. You don't even know what you're talking about. And you're going to be so dead tired the next day you can't see straight. But it seems so important. And what the folks, Menley and Wackman, teach here is, you know, if it's an important issue, it'll still be there tomorrow. You can still work on it. But somehow we get this urgency that we have to get through it. And then we don't do ourselves a good service there. Because what often happens then is we say things that we're too tired or we're too frustrated, and we throw things out that really aren't productive or helpful in the relationship. So, any of you familiar with this, know anything, want to make a comment, and then we'll just start, and I want you to pay attention. Now, what I want to challenge you to do is do this with somebody, because you won't learn it. It will be, I don't even know if it'll be like a good movie, but it'll be like going to the movie and you observe somebody do something and that was interesting or it was uninteresting, but I don't do anything with it. So I would ask you to figure out an issue with somebody. Sometimes in this counseling field, we even do it where there isn't somebody to do it with, but I've got an issue and I really need to really get grounded on. But that person won't go through this with me. Okay, or that person has passed away, or I've done that. I mean, there's things you can do that are amazing when you go through this process. So, Emily, you want to say anything?
I guess what I would say is that this has been extraordinarily helpful for the clients I've worked with to get through issues where they're really stuck. The things that you don't know how to get resolved, where you feel like you're at an impasse. And you'll see how this helps to break through those impasses as you watch Bill and I go through this process. We're each going to take a turn on the wheel, and we're each going to take a turn on the listening cycle. So you'll get to see both of us in both roles. when you're practicing, I think it's better to take an issue that isn't very hot while you're getting used to using the system. Bill and I are going to do a really hot issue just so you can see what it's like to go deeply into something that's really challenging the relationship. The issue that we're going to talk about tonight, and I'll address it when I get up on the wheel, is, and this is hypothetical, I can tell you that both of our parents have passed away, but the issue is going to be that my sister has asked us to take my mother to come and live with us. That's what the issue, the hypothetical issue is that we're going to be talking about. In this issue, you'll see that he and I are at an impasse about how to get through this. Okay? Ready to go, Bill?
Let's go to work.
Okay. Just so our backs aren't to anybody, I'm going to move these chairs and have this be a little bit more of an angle. Like, can you move out of the way for just a second?
Sure.
So that you're not quite right smack in front of Bob. Is that better for everybody? So I know I'm a little
No, I can go back a little bit.
I just don't want to get in your back, though.
Oh, okay.
A little bit over here.
Oh, shucks.
Okay.
No, quite frankly, when we use this with clients in a therapy situation, often we're the referee and you're literally moving people because they'll be sharing thoughts. Well, that's really a feeling. So we're literally moving them in places to stay with the way this is set up.
So we're just going to go through it as if it's real life. And if you need to stop us and ask us questions, that's great. Just put your hand up, okay? Otherwise, we're just going to go from beginning to end.
Or maybe yell, because I'm not going to be looking at you. Because my job is to attend and have good eye contact.
Okay. So, Bill, I have an issue that I would like to work with you on the wheel tonight, and I'm wondering if this is a good time for you to do that.
That's a good time.
Okay. So I'm going to stand on the issue spot first. My issue is the conversations that we have been having about my mom coming to live with us.
Okay.
Okay, are you open to doing that?
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to move to sensory data, which is all things that I can see, hear, taste, smell, my sensory data. So these aren't really disputable. These are the things that anybody watching us engage in this dialogue or in our history of our family would have been able to witness. So, my sensory data.
I'm going to move me back so we're not bumping into each other.
Okay. I heard my sister tell us that she needs a break from caring for her mom. And I saw you avert eye contact with both of us. I saw you raise your hands. I saw you shake your head negatively as my sister and I talked. And I later heard you say, you can't handle this and you will move out if my mom moves in.
See if I've got that, okay. What you said. You talked about when your sister was visiting us and she was saying she was just up to here. She loves your mom, but she's really got to have a break. It's been 2 years. And you said that she said she had to have that break, and you observed me kind of shutting down, well, just looking away and kind of doing like this and shaking my head and saying, I can't do that, even to the point of I'll have to move out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you have some more you want to say about that?
Yes, I have some thoughts about it. My thoughts are that you're scared of change. That you don't trust that I will have good boundaries with my mom, and that you're resorting to manipulation in order to control the outcome by giving me an ultimatum that you would move out if she moves in.
let me take a little time out here. Wow. You really think that? Okay, let me see if I heard that. I heard you say that I'm scared of the change that would come about, and that's what you think. You think that I'm threatening to move out as a manipulation to keep you from taking your mom in, that I'm threatening to move out, and that's a manipulation. Anything else? You said that
you don't trust that I have good boundaries with my mom.
Yeah, and you said that I don't trust that you'll have good boundaries with your mom in a way that we can function as a family. Mm-hmm. So anything else you want to say?
I think my mom has been so independent and self-sufficient her whole life that she may be very challenging to live with. And I think that old age inevitably requires one to role reverse and be willing to graciously be dependent on others and be taken care of. And I think you have tremendous fear around this for yourself. As you watch yourself age and can't stand the mirror of my mom as she represents this, as she's facing this now in her own life.
Okay. Let me see if I got that. You think that I have a lot of fear around this, and that I don't recognize the importance of the circle of life, that she's getting old and she's been a very independent person, and now it's time for her to be more dependent, and that it would create problems in our family and in our relationship, and that really a lot of what's going on is that, being as much older than you as I am, that I'm really scared of looking at your mom as a mirror, that what's happening to me, and that I don't want to deal with it.
That's right.
Do you have more for me?
As a matter of fact, I do.
Okay.
I believe that if my mom came to live with us, it would call us to be better as people and as a family. I believe my sister will help again, and she has had her break. I think my mom is as much fun as she is demanding and feisty.
Let me see if I can. I just want to see if I can catch as many of those thoughts, because I can't lose. This is a lot. I heard you say that you think your mom is as much fun as she is feisty. I would sure agree with that. She's a lot of fun. And she's feisty. And I heard you say that your sister will step up at some point and be back a part of this. And this isn't like a death sentence. This is like there may be a break in her.
That's what my husband would say. And I think we'll be better as people if we do this.
And you think that we, all of us, will be better as people if we do this? Yeah. I'm just having a... I got to process this. You're giving me big bites and I'm going to chew them up. Yeah, is there more?
I think that you and I come from very different family of origin circumstances, and I think that part of the struggle that you're having right now has to do with the way you were raised and the models and the standards that you were brought up with around caring for the old.
So your thoughts are that, well, we certainly know that's true, that the generational idea in your family is very different than it was in my family, and that how we care for the old and how we interact with the old is very different. And I have a whole different set of experiences that you do that are getting in my way. Okay, that's your thoughts.
Oh, that's all my thoughts.
Okay, you have some more?
I have some feelings. Okay, my feelings are that I love and miss my mom, that I'm frustrated by your mistrust of me, I'm disappointed by your seeming unwillingness to give this a try.
Let me see if I can't stay with those. That you really do love and miss your mom,
mm-hmm.
at least the fun part.
All the parts.
All the parts.
Mm-hmm.
And that you, I was thinking, I get caught there. What were the other things you said?
I'm frustrated by your mistrust of me.
No wonder I didn't want to hear that. You're frustrated with the fact that I'm mistrusting that you would not go into this without really having thought it through in a way that works for both of us, and that I'm mistrusting you in that,
mm-hmm.
and that frustrates you.
I'm also disappointed by your seeming unwillingness to give it a try.
And you're disappointed by, even stronger than my seeming unwillingness to give it a try, I drew a line in the sand, and that's disappointing to you.
I just have a couple more. I want you to know that I feel inspired by my mom's zest for living, and I like to have her energy around. And I'm sad that she likely has only a few years left and could go anytime.
And your mom's zest for living has been inspiring to you, and you'd like to be much more a part of that in her last few years before she passes away.
Mm-hmm.
Are there more things?
Yes. I have some wants for myself, for others, and for you. So my wants for myself are to have quality time with my mom while she's still alive. Mm-hmm. My wants for you and my mom are for you to deepen your appreciation of what it means to be in a family, and for my mom to feel loved, nurtured, and respected as the matriarch that she has always been in this family.
So your wants for you, would you say those again?
I want quality time with my mom while she's still alive.
So she's 91, and that's really important to you, to have quality time with her day by day.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would work best if she was living with us. Mm-hmm. And the next thing you said?
For you and my mom, I want for you to deepen your appreciation of what it means to be in a family, and for my mom to feel loved, nurtured, and respected as the matriarch she's always been.
And you would like us to all have that growth experience, your mom, you, I, and respect her for what she has been throughout all the years.
And for you to have an experience around being in a family that I don't think you've ever had.
And for you
a different kind of experience.
Have a different kind of a multi-generational experience, which is an experience I haven't had.
Right. And for us, I would like for you to be able to bond with me and my mom, so it isn't you against me and mom, or you and me against mom. That we don't have any triangulation going on, but you and I can really be unified in this.
So for us, you'd really like to have us be in a bond together and grow together, rather than you and your mom against me, or me and you against your mom, and then that kind of stuff. Any other things?
Yes, I have some action steps that I'm willing to commit to. In the past, I've isolated and protected you from having to deal with the negative dynamics of the strength of my mom's personality. And so I've traveled a lot with mom. We've taken a lot of cruises together. I have visited her back east by myself, and I've kept her very busy sightseeing when she's been in town visiting us in our home.
So what you've done, majestically I will say, is isolated me from those situations as much as possible by going on cruises, by going back to Maine at times when I didn't go, at times I did go, but and really working at keeping her busy doing things so that the interaction didn't happen as much as it might have.
Mm-hmm. And currently what I'm committed to doing is I'm committed to stop protecting you and treating you as if you aren't able to meet the challenge of relating to me and my mom together in a healthy, functional way. And that I'm going to start trusting that you'll be able to experience this is a very inclusive gesture on our part in a positive way that also feels very inclusive of you, and that you will experience me having good boundaries with my mom.
Sort of makes my heart pound, but your current behavior is to, and the actions you're taking is to stop protecting me, protecting what happens here, and believe that I'm up to the challenge, and holding that and setting good boundaries to make it work, but that part of the disappointment that you mentioned earlier is that you have not believed that I would or could do that.
Mm-hmm. And in the future, I commit to exploring alternate solutions for my mom's care if her living with us interferes so much with our relationship that you don't want to live with me or with us. And I will not let her interfere with our marriage.
You said that if it proves to be so difficult that it's really creating the kinds of concerns that I've had about our relationship, that you would consider alternate care rather than let it get weeks anymore. Is there anything more you want to say?
No, I feel complete.
Okay.
Okay, so now we're going to reverse roles, and Bill gets to respond.
Now, let me just say to you, even though it's a role play, there's a couple little parts of it that do carry some truth in that, and I would say that I would be pretty overwhelmed at that moment. I mean, I have to probably take a break before I can do my part, because I heard a lot of stuff, and I'm just saying that that's okay. And there were times when I heard things that I wanted to fire back. There were times that I wanted to deny. That's not the way this system works. The system is for me to take it in. And remember that what I've written on my wheel, I already wrote. So what we do next will be the next go-around, and then the next go-around, and then the next go-around. What we're doing now is getting it up on the table as clean and as clear as possible. But even though it was a role play, I got to tell you, there were times when my heart was pounding and my stomach was just, and that's okay. That's real. So I'm just saying that if any of you choose to do this, it's not for the faint of heart. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Well, one of the things we didn't mention, but as part of the process, it's really, really important to set a time and say, I'd like to discuss that issue. Is this a good time for you? Because frankly, I think right then, I would have said, no, this isn't a good time for me. How about tomorrow or the next day? I need some time to process. Mm-hmm. So I would say to you, is this a good time to talk about our issue with bringing your mom on board?
Yes, it is.
Good. That's my issue. Okay, well, here's my sense, David. I heard your sister say she can no longer take care of mom, that her 2 years is up, and that she just can't do that right now for a lot of reasons, and I think are really good reasons. I heard your sister and I heard you say mom cannot take care of herself. I've seen her cry, I've seen her lose her temper and yell, I've seen her fall, I've heard her say, my eyes are okay as she bumped into things. I've heard her call from the bathroom, I can't get up from the tub, help. And I've heard her say, I've heard you say, mom needs help and we may have to take her in.
So let me see if I got this. You heard Sunny and I talking about the need for Sunny to have some help, mm-hmm. and that she is asking us to take a turn with mom, and that as you heard that, you reflected back on some moments you've experienced with mom that aren't very pleasant for you to remember, and they included times when mom was really vulnerable and scared and cried out for help and denied that she's legally blind, as she's bumping into things and claiming her sight is just fine. And that there's ways in which she has behaved that are really, you believe in some ways, more challenging or difficult than what you really think is healthy for us to take on.
That's sort of it. There's a part of that that you didn't get what I was saying, because I don't question that she needs the help. And because the things I listed, she clearly can't function on her own. She cannot do that. I thought I heard you feeding back to me that bothered me, and that doesn't bother me. She needs help, and I know that. I don't know if I can be a part of being the help answer, but she needs help, and it's clear that's why I listed those things. There's no question, and there's no question that right now Sunny can't be the one to provide the help.
So you're not at all disputing the fact that we have to make some big decisions about mom.
Mm-hmm. No, she needs the help.
Is there more?
Yeah, I've got some more things I want to share. Just to step out of role for a minute. If you do this work and you work with this kind of wheel, some people go from sense data to thoughts. some people go from sense data to feelings. And I can't tell you, and you'll figure that out if you really work this wheel, but that's just the way we're hardwired. I go from sense data to feelings. Boy, my old heart starts pounding and my stomach starts gurgling. And some people go straight to thoughts. So I'm just saying, in my case, I would now jump to feelings because that's where I go from sense data.
And I'm guessing some of that has to do with your preference on the Myers-Briggs, which we won't get into for a couple of days, but that may have some impact on how you do this wheel as well.
Can I ask, what do you do if, for example, you said you want to deny and fire back at her when your positions were reversed?
Mm-hmm.
What would you do if
you take a time out? If you can't stay, if you can't keep listening because you're so triggered that you want to fire back, you say,
I took two timeouts during the time.
But if he has started that and he wouldn't take time out himself, would you have said, obviously we need to take a time out?
Yes, because his job over here is to listen and to attend and to acknowledge. And as soon as he starts commenting, putting his commentary on what I've said, then he has broken all the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say we need to take a time out.
And the system works if you stay with the system. Sometimes people can't do that and need a referee, you know, that's, or a counselor. You know,
or if you need to say, I can't respond right now, I'm so triggered by what I just heard you say, I can't even listen.
That's okay,
time out.
Is it okay to take lengthy timeouts, like a day? Say that's
sure.
Yes.
I could see myself becoming overwhelmed quickly with something like that.
Sure.
As long as you don't talk about it off the wheel.
Yeah.
In other words, when you're ready to address it, you come back to the mat.
And here's another thing that we run into. As long as you do agree to come back, the person that takes the time out has to come back and say, and if you let that go a week, 2 weeks, then you're not using the system. I mean, but to take...
Committed to getting it resolved. Because this is about resolution.
And classically, if someone is an introverted feeler, when we talk about Helen Myers-Briggs, and you get all this kind of information, I've got to go and process it. I just cannot do that. There's no way. It's just not humanly possible to do that. But you have to be respectful. Okay, but I'll step back in. But, okay, so I said, so I go to feelings. And you noticed with Bree, and I will do the same thing too, I will try to differentiate between feelings and thoughts. So my feelings when I'm putting my wheel together are I feel trapped, I feel sad, I'm angry, I'm frustrated, I'm hurt, I feel betrayed, I'm anxious, and I'm overwhelmed with the fear of loss at what it looks to me like this could bring.
So let me see if I'm getting this. As you think about the issue, the biggest feeling you have is one of being trapped.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of fear of the loss of what our relationship has always looked like to you.
Mm-hmm.
And out of that you have some anger and sadness and frustration and a feeling of betrayal, I assume for me, but I would put my relationship with my mom ahead of what you want for us.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Did I get it?
You got it.
Okay. Is there more?
My thoughts. What do I think is going on? Well, what I did was I just took my feelings and tried to write something about each one of them. I feel trapped. It seems like there's no choice. She can't live alone. And I can't have a little lesson. I just feel trapped in that. I feel sad. I believe we'll lose our life as we know it. I feel angry because it seems like you're not giving me a choice. And that may not be your fault, but it feels like I'm not getting a choice. And it feels like it's me or her, and there are no other options. I feel hurt and betrayed. I feel anxious and overwhelmed and feel just the fear of the loss of our relationship. I think I would leave question mark. I don't know. What about you and Laura? But I don't know if I could do anything otherwise. I can't get my arms around this.
Okay, so let me see if I'm getting what you're saying. That some of the thoughts that are tied to the feelings that you've been sharing with me have a lot to do with just loss of control and feeling like you have absolutely no choice because you recognize how vulnerable my mom is and that there's a need there that we need to respond to. And that you're angry that I'm putting you in a position where you're feeling like I'm choosing between you and mom. And in so doing, there's a loss for you if I were to choose mom. And that would be really hurtful to you if I chose mom. I would feel really sad and really betrayed and really alone. Is there more?
No. I've got more things to say, not about my thoughts.
Okay, tell me more.
My wants? My wants for myself, I want to be true to myself. I want to support you to do well for your mom, but I want to be true to myself. For others, Laura, your sister, I know everybody in a close family situation is upset about this. And I want there to be a resolution that they feel okay about. And for us, I want us to stay together and to unite in a meaningful, supportive decision.
Okay, let me see if I got this. For yourself, you want to stay true to yourself and also support me being able to have a decision that I can live with. For others, you want there to be resolution because you know that there's a lot of members in the family that are in some level of angst over how to get this resolved and that you'd like there to be a positive outcome for everyone. And for us, you'd like us to stay together and grow together through this.
Mm-hmm.
Is there more?
There is.
Okay.
When I look at my actions in the past, and look at what I've done, if I get in a situation like this, whenever I see, and I hadn't thought about this till I was working on this wheel, but whenever I see people be unkind or caustic or nasty or hurtful to people I love, and I see it repeated, I just lop them out of my life. That's what I've done in the past. I don't spend time with people that hurt people I love. That's what I've done in the past. And what I'm currently doing is I'm right in the middle. I don't want to risk the loss of you and Laura, but I am drawing a line here. And for the future, do you want to respond to that or should I go ahead?
No, I'd be happy to respond. So, what I hear you say is that historically what you've done is just throw people away that create problems for you or that you believe are creating problems for other people. That you, I think you use the word lock them off. And that there are some of my mom's behaviors that you think have demonstrated hurtful behavior that I've been the recipient of in the past. And because of that, it's hard for you to invite her further into our life. And so that's historically how you've resolved those kinds of things, to have those people just go away. Currently, you're drawing a line in the sand.
And what I've done, as far as looking at where I could go with this, I'll commit to deep conversation about this. I'll go to a referee or counselor if we need that to get everything out that you have to say. For me to get everything out that I have to say, because I got a few more things to say about this that we didn't work out here. And what I'm willing to do is to agree to if we were in business, I'd call it a binding arbitration. I'm willing to agree that we work this, I want to work it enough that we both come to a point where we're as close as we can be, and then whatever we decide on, I'll live with. Rather than lose the relationship with you.
So, what I'm hearing you say is that you will go to whatever lengths we need to continue to process and work this issue until it's thoroughly, thoroughly been discussed. We're both completely heard and understood that we'll hire outside help if we need to get there, and that we'll get as close as we can to something that we can both feel good and agree to, and whatever that is, you will stand behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Is there more?
No, that's about all I could do for today.
Okay, thank you.
You're really welcome. So anybody been there?
Not exactly the same way.
But I meant being there with difficult situations that you just don't know where to go or think of any way to get through them.
I just think that it would take a huge commitment on both parties.
Huge commitment.
Huge. I mean, we were sort of joking over here. I mean, my husband would say, no way. I mean, I think you said it was a death sentence. That's exactly what he would say, and that would be, you know, end of topic.
Is it always done face-to-face like that? I'm a lawyer, and I do, used to be, every case that I have now goes through a mediation process as required by Washington law.
Mm-hmm.
And used to be, 20 years ago, when mediations were first starting to be in vogue, but they were all done face-to-face, and the mediator would have each person talk, and each person talk. And I know it's not the same as this interpersonal situation, but they have found over the years that it's really helpful to have people separated and have this mediator go back and forth. And it's not exactly the same situation, but it takes out a lot of the tension out of it. But is that ever part of the refereeing process? Does the referee ever talk individually to the people? And there's also the good thing about that works in mediations is that there's an automatic timeout.
Mm-hmm.
Because the mediator is talking with the other person, and then the person who's not talking with has a chance to breathe and you know, sort through it and think about it before they get faced with it again. Does that ever happen?
I don't know if you have thoughts about that. I can just say that I think that where there is that level of discord that you're working with attorneys, you're probably past the stage where this would be helpful. But this is intended for couples who have the best interests of the relationship at heart. That there's a you and a me, and that there's an us, and that this is a way to come
together. And it really is an us. There's still an us here.
That's a difference, I guess.
And you're talking about people who don't have the us anymore.
So just technically speaking, you would actually encourage the purchase of and the use of on the floor those two items.
Many of my clients have done that. They literally will come in and say, we had to get the mats out this week. And I know, okay, well then they really, really work hard this week. And usually then we get to process more and they go home and they probably get the mats out again.
Where do you get them?
You order them from...
You order them through that company that I mentioned.
Oh.
And I'm not trying to sell for them, I don't get a cut. But I've really found that using the system, I've heard the same thing from couple. We had to get the mats out. Because somehow that seems like we have to stay in the context of the way we're going to interact if we've got the mats out.
There's something about standing on the mats that keeps you centered and focused on the task, especially if you're listening, because you have to have all those little steps of, are you inviting the person? Are you asking them if there's more that they would like to say? Are you attending? Are you acknowledging? And it keeps you remembering that I'm on the listening cycle. I don't get to be responding.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times when you can't listen because you're already thinking of the response. You're already ready to tell them how wrong they are, but that's not what happened, and that's not what my mother's like, and she doesn't yell. I don't know why you make those things up about her. Things like that. And instead, I have to go, okay, this is what his experience is, and acknowledge it.
You know, it would seem like people would have to be coached. A couple would have to be coached and have it demonstrated. Let's say that I had an issue with my husband, I think this is a great way to do it, and I bring it home or I send off work, and he actually is a very understanding person, he'd probably go along with it, but I might not if it were reversed. It's like, this is your thing and I don't like it. So, you know, it's really helpful to mirror, you know, your behavior. Because I was really amazed that you didn't get, Bill, that you didn't get more anxious.
Oh, I did.
Upset. That you were able to stay with, you know, the listening.
Mm-hmm. And you know, after you've used this technique enough times, you begin to trust that the person will stay committed to listening. So you get to say these outrageous things that are your truth. Mm-hmm. Because you know they're not going to shoot you back down. They're going to have to say, I hear you saying that you think I'm the biggest jerk in the world.
Or that you're scared of getting old, or that you're all this kind of stuff. I don't want to hear that. It may even be true, but I don't want to hear it. But I do need to hear her reality. But that's got a lot to do with what's going on here, how she's living this experience. So another thing that I think responds to something that you said, I wasn't thinking about things, but they run workshops all around the country, the couples communication people do, and it's about I think you meet three times for 4 hours or something. It's not a particularly expensive thing, but they work you through in a lot more detail than what we did here, step by step by step by step. And then one of the things that I thought was really neat, that when I first took that training, some of the folks in here know, because we've run into some times where we're old friends, but my former wife, who passed away years ago, we took this training, and then it was interesting to me. We went twice and met with these folks, and they did that with us as a couple. Then for a month we didn't meet, but we were paired up with one other couple to meet somewhere, a restaurant or something, and to practice. One would go through an issue, and the other would go for an issue, and the other would watch. Then we met for a third time. So it's not a great time commitment, but it grounds you a lot more, and it can bring along someone else that says, oh, maybe that works. And it's really kind of neat. Then you're supposed to be meeting with another couple to go through an issue. And so I remember we used to meet this couple. We were meeting with, we used to meet out at Brown's Point at the lobster place over on the other side of the water, not before. Those of you that aren't from Tacoma won't know what I'm talking about. But at any rate, I don't know that it's easy to take what we've given you and go and do it. I'm just trying to pique your interest, but if you're committed to a process like this, you can do it. But you've got to stay with the process. And I took two timeouts. Another thing, and I don't know whether it was, because this carried, even though it was a role play, some emotional charge for me, I couldn't feed back to her as well as she could feed back to me. I'd have to take one piece and stop it and say, let me take that piece, because there were so many things that I was trying to process, and that's okay. You don't have to, like, she got a whole thing and she'd get them all right. Well, I didn't do it that way. I got one and I'd say, let me feed one back, because that's all I could do.
So then what would the next step be? Do you figure out maybe what the biggest piece of that would be is, how would you establish boundaries with your mother that wouldn't affect our relationship? Would that be like an issue you take out of that? And that's what you would decide between yourselves as to what, now where are we?
Well, here's the tricky part, or the good part, or the bad part about this. But I would go do another wheel, and she would go do another wheel, and we wouldn't talk about it until we did the thing together again. But see, she said a number of things that I'd want to talk about. And what I heard you say, and what I saw when you sneered at me, and well, you didn't, but, you know, so I'd do another wheel, and I'd bring up, I heard you say you set good boundaries, and my thoughts are, I've never seen you do that with your mom, and I don't think you can and will now. That'd be my thoughts. And my feelings would be, we're going to really have a ton of trouble, because you're responding to need rather than to what's reality. But I'd get the chance to say all that in another wheel. And like I said, this is a lot of work. If somebody said one time, well, you've all heard this and I've heard it, being in a couple relationship is a lot of work. This is a lot of work. But it works. I mean, any of you that are 12-steppers would know, they say at the end of the meeting, keep coming back, it works if you work it. And that's the 12-step tradition. It's this tradition too. It's a lot of work, but it worked. Yeah.
So the issue in the middle always stays the same, even if what you want to come back with next week is I saw you sneering and now I have these issues.
No, the issue can change.
Issue can change.
Yeah.
Okay. So then instead of talking about your mom, then you say, well, I didn't like the way I saw you sneering and this reminds me of the time that we had this problem.
Yeah, that might be our whole issue now. And we still got to get back to mom, but maybe we got some side issues that we got to get through. Which we probably would in reality on this, because it isn't all just mom. It's do we want to do this kind of work to really work on our relationship intensely? But it has to come back to the mom issue, because that's happening. Or it wasn't happening, but it could be happening.
One of the things that I experienced was the value of writing. Because at the end, you're basically talking about accountability.
Yes.
It's a contract of a kind. I don't know if you ever signed or any of that kind of stuff.
But it is a contract.
Yes, and especially you get a dynamic where, as I understand Myers-Briggs, you've got a sensor and you've got an intuitive who tend to think or who tend to see things in more concrete detail versus sort of a global understanding that you could get into some real hullabaloo over I thought you said.
I thought you said.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which really means what I heard and the way I interpreted what you said. Well, we've got a lot of different stuff going on there. So you're right, and I think the commitment to writing out your wheel ahead of time is huge. It's that and staying with the process are the two things that allow it to work. Otherwise, it just won't.
I was really surprised when Bree said, I think part of the issue is that you're afraid of getting old and you see my mother mirroring, or you see old age
mirror
when
yes.
you look at her. And to me, that seemed that was way off issue. And so I guess the question is, are there ground rules about how much you can introduce into it? I mean, because to me that's a huge new issue.
I don't think so. I think that in, for me, in my awareness, was running his life at that point. I mean, it was big. I needed him to hear. Mm-hmm. Now, there may be no validity to it, and we may have to come back and talk about why I feel that way and what am I experiencing about him that would make me think that, which we ought to get cleaned up. But if I really believe that is influencing him being able to talk with me about my mom, then I need him to know that is my belief.
And of course, a part that grows out of this model is because it's her belief doesn't mean it's right. But it is important for me to know what she thinks about it. And that may not be comfortable for me to hear, but if that's what she thinks about it, and I don't know that, there's no way I can work with it in any positive kind of way.
You know, one of the things that kind of fits in with what you're asking me is, one of the greatest gifts I've had from doing this wheel so many times is I've learned not to take anything personally. Because I've heard some outrageous things. I just thought, wow. Okay, so this is what you're thinking, and it really has helped me get that I can work a whole lot better if I really have all the cards on the table and not think that they're necessarily accurate, but they are the cards they're playing with. And not take it on as if it's the truth just because it's what they're making up about me. Just like Bill doesn't necessarily have to buy in at all to what I'm projecting onto him. So it is a great exercise in not taking things personally, because if you do, you'll be triggered, you'll be in the little timeout spot all the time.
And I can see that that would be a huge problem, that many people could not do this because they do take everything personally.
Yep. But that's a great learning too, to not. Somebody, yes.
I like this process because, well, it reminds me of being a newlywed and all the arguments about how there's really only one true reality and you just don't see it, you know. And it honors the fact that it's all about perception.
Yes.
And there are two people and they each have their own perception, and it's there's not this one truth. That alone was is such an eye-opener, mm-hmm. but it's so easy to fall back into when you're really trusting yourself that you are seeing the situation clearly,
clearly.
And the other person is really confused.
Until they get on the wheel and you have to feed back
right.
your whole reality to
right.
it.
Right, right. Really
Bree, what if you have two people, one brimming with self-confidence and the other with a very, very bad self-image at that point? Doesn't that second person have to do some individual
yes.
work before you do this?
Yeah, because
you need to have a level.
It takes some courage to stand up and tell your truth and risk that that person will listen. And also to be able to listen to some things that if your ego is really, really fragile, will be shattered.
Yeah, and no one has equal ego force, or whatever you want to call it. So that's where I see the inherent possible difficulty is how do you tell when one person needs some additional?
You know, my experience has been when I've worked with couples where the person who has the least amount of ego strength goes on the wheel first, it helps a lot. Because you watch them kind of grow as they get listened to.
Mm-hmm.
As the person really, really attends and feeds back, and I will be coaching them and say, now do you think he really got it? Because I don't think he did. You know, and I'm kind of like, I don't think he
and
got it.
Coaching them to say,
what you said.
But you would be able to tell if they're so disparate that one needs some additional help.
But that's why we do it in counseling.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that way I can sort of be the wind beneath their wings.
So that would take care of that.
Yeah.
And there were a couple times when I didn't think Greed got what I was saying. So if I didn't have the chutzpah to say, I don't think you got what I was saying, that's when you need somebody else to step in and say. And I think the best way in the world, a guy named, boy, it just went sideways.
Yeah.
The clinic back in Minnesota, where is it?
Mayo?
No.
Rochester?
Oh,
yeah.
Hazel.
No, it doesn't matter. Anyway, his comment was, and then it'll come to me after you all leave, but his comment was that if we all had three good friends, there wouldn't be a therapist in business in the world. Well, I think sometimes if you're willing to find another couple to do some of this kind of work with you, you don't have to buy a therapist. If people are willing to be truth tellers and you can join in some things that are really wonderful, brings a different level. But, you know, we've all got to see what we've got to do. But we've only got 45 seconds, and I want to make sure if there's anything else that we can tell you about today.
What do you tell people so they don't take those things personally? Because that, to me, is just would be the most difficult piece. You know, what do you say before you begin to the couple when somebody who knows you very well is telling you something that's painful? How do you not take that personally?
Well, I think in terms of being a therapeutic intervention, what I often will say is if you're wearing it and it doesn't belong to you, it won't fit.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important for you to take and try things on, because sometimes they do fit and sometimes they don't. And so the problem with taking things personally is you end up taking everything on and trying to wear it even when it doesn't fit. And so part of therapy is to help you, after the fact, discern the difference between the things that fit and the things that don't.
And this is a silly answer, but I asked him to read Don Miguel Ruiz's book, The Four Agreements. And one of the four agreements is don't take anything personally. And recognize that that's their perception. Or the codependence mantra is, what you think of me is none of my business. We need to quit. Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
It was.